side. Honor them crazy murderers, we never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. You not I can just see, hoping up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right, in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Thursday, January the 7th, 2021, and you are listening to today's surprise edition of The Ugly Truth. Welcome to the program, folks. Just as surprised as you are to hear me behind the microphone again today, folks, I am equally as surprised. But I did promise that I was going to do two programs a week come the first of the year, and we are at the first of the year. And so, yes, it is a bit close. We're here just about 24 hours apart from each other. But not just making good on my promise, folks, I also have to consider the possibility or even the likelihood that we will not be doing the program for much longer given the events of the last 24 hours. I said this when I began doing the program again, I don't know when it was, a month, 2 months ago, that we would hang in there for as long as we could, as long as there was a system in place that could support doing a program like this. And I wasn't necessarily talking about money, folks, although that certainly does come into play. But more important than that, more relevant than that, is a system in place, a system of support known as the Internet, right? I don't know what we would call it, just the normal continuity of life that we enjoy even within, these very tumultuous times that we find ourselves right now. Well, all of that has changed in the last 24 hours since we were together, and I think everybody listening to this program knows exactly what I'm talking about. And if you don't, then you need to get your head out of the sand and pay attention, because even my little 7-year-old is asking questions about what has taken place. Of course, she is kind of an exception to that. She loves to sit in front of YouTube and watch speeches of President Trump. Yes, my little girl would rather watch that than watch, I don't know what the latest craze is with kids these days, but yeah, she loves to watch President Trump. But anyway, yes, things have ramped up considerably, folks, since the last time we were together, 24 hours ago. And I fear that we are now on the cusp, on the edge, on the precipice of a severe change of life. And we'll be getting to that here in a bit. I'm hoping, folks, to keep the program, as I've said before, at an hour or less. I don't have any sound bites to play today, so that obviously is going to help out to some degree. So I want to keep it at around an hour or less, and I'll do my best to that. Now, the other reason why I went ahead and decided to do the program today, folks, besides the fact that the world as we know it literally is falling apart piece by piece rather quickly now, and it's going to, I think that the birth pangs, anybody who has gone through childbirth or who has witnessed it, as I have on a few occasions, knows that that when, the mother-to-be, as she gets closer and closer to delivering the baby, that the contractions come closer and closer to each other. They start off 10 minutes apart, and then they're 9 minutes apart, and then, the closer that they get, the more intense they get as well. And we are witnessing, we are in that stage right now, folks. And interestingly enough, this is exactly the terminology that Jesus Christ used when he talked about, you know, this future time. And he talked about it being like the birth pains of a woman, you know, who's about, her time has come. And that's what we're dealing with. The birth pains are getting, they're coming quicker and quicker, and they're more intense and more painful. And I fear that what we are about to witness, folks, is going to be something that we're not going to forget, if ever, for a long time, if ever. Before we get to that, I want to start off. I remembered after yesterday's program, I remembered, you know, what I wanted to talk about, one of the things I wanted to talk about. And on that note, by the way, with regards to yesterday's program, thank you very much to those of you who sent some very kind commentary to me regarding the quality of the program. I certainly hope that you are getting something out of this, folks. I hope I'm not just wasting oxygen, wasting people's time. I hope that you are able to get something out of this that is going to somehow sustain or assist you in the coming trials that we're all going to be facing here in the very, very near future. Anyway, one of the things I wanted to talk about yesterday, and it completely slipped my mind, was a, you know, those of you who've been following the program may remember that I mentioned some programs back that I had recently started listening to Rush Limbaugh again. And, you know, folks, that it's just a commentary on how screwed up things are within the quote-unquote 9/11 truth. I'm not going to say it. You know what I'm talking about. That MVMT word. You know how that things have gotten really screwed up when you have to go back to listening to people like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity in order to get some semblance of intelligent commentary on the very important political events that we're dealing with these days. Well, I hadn't listened to Rush Limbaugh for, it's been, I guess, about 15 years, folks. And the last program that I listened to was the program where I actually was able to get through as a caller and to engage with Mr. Limbaugh in a disagreeable manner. Now, the topic of the discussion, this was in, it was either in the run-up to the war, I think it was in the run-up to the war. Yeah, because I remember, see, the war started in the spring, and this was, we were still in the winter at that time. Yeah. So, the topic on Limbaugh's program that day, at least during that segment, was Pat Buchanan and an article that Pat had written prior to this war, you know, what we call today, you know, the destruction of Iraq, okay? And this article, if memory serves me correctly, that Pat Buchanan had written was entitled Whose War? And it was an excellently written, excellently researched article. And in it, Pat basically lays out the who, what, where, when, why, and how of the neoconservatives, okay? Because this was a new term, this was a new lexicon in American political discourse in that period in between 9/11 and what was going to be this huge satanic black mass that was officiated by the high priest of war himself, George W. Bush. And Pat Buchanan certainly is no neophyte. He's no, what's the worst, having the same problem that I had yesterday. It's approaching old age, folks. That's what it is. He's no neophyte. He's no novice. That's a good word. Good word. When it comes to politics, I mean, he worked for several presidential administrations. He was on very good, close terms with several presidents. So when Pat talks politics, he knows what he's talking about. And this article that he wrote was entitled Whose War? And in it, Pat goes through, you know, in a very, as I said, well-researched, well-argued dissertation on who the neocons were, okay, and are. And the one thing that he made sure to that his readers understood when they read this is that the neocons, as innocuous as the term sounds, neoconservative, oh, that doesn't sound so bad. Neo just means new, so they're new conservatives. Well, of course, the language in designating them as neoconservative in and of itself was something that the Gentiles were forced to adopt in order to, they hoped, escape the charge of being Jew haters and anti-Semites. Because the neoconservatives at their core, okay, their nature was that they were hardcore Marxist Jews who had fled Stalin's Russia because they had been supporters of Trotsky. And upon coming to America, lucky us, they realized that their particular brand of Marxism, which was internationalist in its scope, was never going to fly in America, and especially within the Democrat Party, because the Democrats, you know, generally speaking, they tended to be the party of the underdog, and therefore, after 1967, when the Jews went and stole all of this land in the Middle East, basically doubling the size of her territory, you know, you have all of these displaced and disenfranchised and oppressed peoples in the personhood of the Palestinians and others. And so these hardcore Trotskyite Marxists, they abandoned the Democratic Party and they joined up with the Republicans, even though their ideology did not change, okay? They were still hardcore Marxists, but the beating heart of their ideology was Israel, okay? And anyway, this was a very well-researched article that Buchanan had put together, and Rush Limbaugh on this particular program was shouting it down, chopping it up, you know, accusing Buchanan of being a closet anti-Semite and all of the rest of that, even though everything that Buchanan had written in this was 100% verifiably true. And of course, Buchanan's reason for writing this was to warn the American people about the very particular pedigree of people who just so happened, what a coincidence, just so happened to occupy some of the highest positions within the George W. Bush White House. And that maybe, just maybe, these people having this passionate attachment to Israel could possibly have some kind of an effect on George W. Bush's decision to go into Iraq and to, as I said, to officiate this satanic black mass of human sacrifice that he did. Anyway, I managed to get through. I don't know how, maybe it was just fate. And when I was on with Mr. Limbaugh, I said, first of all, was there anything factually untrue with what Buchanan wrote? And he kind of parried that question aside, and I said, well, let's just talk in a hypothetical sense here. What if these guys, instead of being hardcore supporters of Israel and of the Jewish pedigree, instead they were Muslims? What if Bush, in some fit of madness, political madness in America, decided to put hardcore Muslims, okay, not that I, you know, folks, those of you who listen to this program know I have no problem with Muslims. I have no problem with Islam. So please don't take it into that territory, because that's not what I'm saying. I'm just using this in an exercise of compare and contrast. So I said to Rush Limbaugh, I said, what if they were all Muslims? And what if, as a result of their influence within the Bush White House, the Bush administration had adopted a very different attitude with regards to its foreign policy objectives in the Middle East that strongly favored countries such as Saudi Arabia, Iran, Iraq, blah, 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 and took a decidedly antithetical or less than worshipful posture towards Israel? Well, Limbaugh didn't want to discuss that at all. Okay, he didn't. He wasn't comfortable. He said, "Well, that's just a hypothetical, and it's not possible, so we're not going to bother discussing it." Well, anyway, that was the last time I had listened to Limbaugh, because I knew at that point the fact that he would deliberately avoid a discussion as important as that, as the neocon influence within the George W. Bush White House in the run-up to what was this horrific war, this horrific exercise in human sacrifice ordered by Israel, I just said to myself, he's just a well of poison, and there's no point in listening to him anymore, and I didn't even wind up on a radio station that was broadcasting his program by accident. Nevertheless, about a year and a half ago, I found myself doing some remodeling work, and I said, well, I'm going to just tune in and see where Limbaugh is with regards to all of this business involving Donald Trump. You know, I pretty much figured that Limbaugh would be supportive of Trump, because Limbaugh, generally speaking, at least he was in the past, he would always give his almost unquestioning support behind anybody who was a Republican. And I was quite shocked to hear what Limbaugh had to say on these programs that I began listening to. He talked about the existence of the deep state. Now, this is important, folks, because many, many years before that, I remember listening to Limbaugh religiously, and anybody who called in suggesting that there was such a thing as a deep state, that it was anything deeper or more intricate and more complicated than simply Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal, left, right, blah, blah, blah. He called them kooks. In fact, he had a little routine that he used to do on his program where he would do what he called the kook test to see whether or not somebody was a kook. And he said, you know, and there were these questions that he would pose, and depending on how you answered them, you know, do you believe that the Federal Reserve Bank is a private corporation owned by, you know, 10 families, mostly from Europe, and that they control the value of a nation's current, of the United States dollar, blah, blah, blah. If you believe that, then you're a kook, even though, you know, that is that is absolutely correct. You know, that is as correct as saying saying that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Nevertheless, he did have this little comedy routine that he used to do. And he even said on his program one time, early on during those days, where he said he used to believe in all those things, you know, the Federal Reserve, Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, all of this deep state business. But then he had a conversation, I think he said, with his grandfather, and his grandfather had quote-unquote set him straight on those issues, and then he had abandoned them. Okay. There is a point to all of this, ladies and gentlemen. Just stay with me here. Anyway, I tuned into Limbaugh, you know, as I said, about a year and a half ago, and lo and behold, he had grown quite a bit. He had, you know, all of the things that he used to downplay now were mainstays on his program, talking about the deep state, and he even, you know, he even talked about, you know, how we have to get out of these endless wars. And I said, well, hot dog, what came over him? This was the same guy who was rah, rah, rah all for the war when George W. Bush was president right after 9/11. And now he's talking like Donald Trump and the people on the left who are saying, you know, no more wars. Okay. Anyway, right before Christmas this year, or, you know, 2020. Of course, you know, folks, that unfortunately Rush Limbaugh is dying. He has lung cancer and it's terminal, and he's probably not going to be with us much longer. And so on his last program before the Christmas break, he spent the last part of his program basically without saying goodbye to everyone. Formally, he was saying goodbye. He was saying that, you know, he doesn't have long to live, and how much he appreciates what everybody has done for him. And then he said something very, very interesting, very, very profound, folks. He said, despite all of the success that I have achieved, you know, 30-something years is the most listened to broadcaster, you know, in America, and all of these things, he says, I still feel like I have failed. Now, he didn't go into a deep, any kind of deep description or discussion about the exact nature of why he felt like he has failed. But I have a pretty good idea why, folks. And here is the point of this discussion. I'm sure that Limbaugh, Rush Limbaugh, feels like he has failed in this, despite, you know, this great success that he has achieved, certainly a very wealthy man, because now he has finally gotten the president that he has wanted, at least during the 30-something years of his career as a conservative broadcaster. He's gotten the president that he has always wanted, and this president is being taken down. Okay. And it would appear, at least on the surface, that it's an impossible process to stop. Now, the reason that, and then I'm going to be somewhat presumptuous here, folks, in crawling into Mr. Limbaugh's mind. He's a very intelligent man. He's very well informed. He has regular conversations with the president, with whom he is. He has a very sincere friendship. Okay, play golf together and all the rest of that. And I'm sure I would be willing to bet my left earlobe, folks, my left earlobe, that the topic of the neoconservatives has come up. Now, I know that it's an issue because Limbaugh has talked about it on his program. Now, he hasn't called them the neoconservatives. He's called them the Never Trumpers. Okay. But remember, folks, Never Trumper is a very specific term. It's a very specific term that was developed by none other than the head honcho of the neoconservative gang in the United States, Bill Kristol. He is the one who coined that term, Never Trumper. Now, on Limbaugh's program on several occasions, he has referenced specifically Bill Kristol and Jennifer Rubin and David Froom and Max Boot and all of these guys of the very, very Hebraic pedigree. And he said, I think, he has said on several occasions, I think I have figured it out, folks. I've figured it out why they don't like Donald Trump. And I'm thinking, please, please say it. Please, please say Israel. Please say Trump's plan to pull out of these Middle East wars that by their very nature, they are designed to destroy America. Okay? Please let him say it. And of course, Limbaugh dodged in his explanation. And I don't think it's because he doesn't really know. I think it's because he does know that this is what's known as the third rail. You know, to touch this topic. Remember the game when we were kids? I think it was called Operation, and it was a battery operated game, and you were a doctor, and there was this body that was drawn on this board with these holes in it, and they had the shapes of various things, like a bone, and there's a heart, and there's the liver, and your job is to reach in there and to get hold of whatever it is, a bone or a liver or a pancreas or whatever, and to get it out without touching the side where there was a metal connection there. And if you touched it, then the guy's nose would light up red and it wouldn't go, and then you'd lose your turn. Okay. So, you know, within American political discourse, that is the equivalent of bringing up the J word, of dropping the J bomb in any kind of substantive political discussion. As soon as you start talking about the Jews, then you're out of the game. Anyway, so Limbaugh is talking about, you know, and he asks rather rhetorically, what is it with you know, all these people He doesn't say neocons. These never Trumpers, you know. Bill Kristol and David Froom and Max Boot and Jennifer Rubin and blah, blah, blah. He said, I think I figured out what it is. I'm saying, please let him say it. Let him go out with a bang. Let him give the truth to the American people, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Look, what does he have to worry about? Does he have to worry about losing his career? He's going to be dead soon. Limbaugh's explanation for their antipathy towards Donald J. Trump was that they were jealous, which could be very true. That we know that those of the Hebraic persuasion generally tend to be very covetous. Okay, they don't like seeing other people prosper. They don't like seeing other people happy. They don't like seeing other people successful. Okay, because that belongs to them and them alone. And if anybody happens to acquire any of that, it's because they got it from, it was given as a gift by the Hebrews. Okay, so he says that it's jealousy, which, as I said, okay, there's probably a certain amount of truth to that, but that's not the big enchilada. Okay, and we all know that, folks. Okay. You don't have to have a PhD in political science or in history or any of that to figure out what it is that made the neocons love George W. Bush and what has made the neocons hate Donald Trump. And this hate, folks, this hatred was instantaneous. It wasn't 6 months into Trump's term, wasn't a year into it, 2 years. You know, there comes a certain point at which, you know, your fan base starts to, their appreciation for you begins to wane, okay, because of certain policies that by virtue of the political process you are forced to adopt, okay. With Trump, they hated him immediately. These neocons, the Jewish lobby, they hated him the moment that he came down the escalator at Trump Towers and announced his plans for achieving the presidency. Immediate. So, what was it about Donald J. Trump that set them off in this way and to this degree? And it obviously, folks, it has not let up. Not let up. So, the reason for me bringing up this extended discussion involving Rush is it brings us back to this two-word question that we have been asking and discussing now for the last couple of programs, and which we're going to continue to discuss after I finish this little section dealing with Rush Limbaugh, is what if? Okay. Limbaugh feels that he is a failure. And again, I'm going to crawl into his brain here. I'm going to presume to have an idea as to what is driving these feelings on his part. He knows that he helped create the very monster that is in the process of devouring and destroying the presidency of Trump, who is, as I said before, this is Rush Limbaugh's dream come true in terms of a conservative president. He knows that he helped create this monster. He knows, yes, the Democrats this and the liberals that, but we also know that the Democrats and the liberals, if Trump were truly a protected man, if he were there by the good graces of Judea, that those forces that have been working against him 24/7, 365 for the last 4 years, that they would have been pulled back quite a bit. You know, you saw a little bit of, they have to allow the dogs to bark a little bit. Okay, they did during Bush to a certain degree, but in general, the Jews were very pleased with what George Bush was doing with murdering an entire nation of people in Iraq. Yeah, they were not happy over the fact that he balked with regards to Iran, but you know, they figured that they had that deal sewn up with Obama because of the banking collapse that they caused in the middle of September of 2008, and they were going to drop this right in Obama's lap just a few months later, once he became president, and it was announced that it was, quote-unquote, Iran who had caused this run on the banks. And so Limbaugh now is dealing with regret, the regret of knowing that he helped. He didn't create the monster, but he protected it. Okay, and I know this to be the case, folks, because I was intimately involved. I was a witness to this crime of his, because I was pointing out on this program that these people were real. These people, everything that was in Buchanan's article was 100% correct about them, and that they posed a clear and present danger to the national security of the United States. Now, folks, getting back to this question that we've been asking, okay, and yes, I'm sure that, you know, to a certain degree, it's more academic than it is practical, okay, but at the same time, you know, the reason for studying history, I mean, everything about our lives and all the creature comforts that we have are based on history, and by that, what I mean is, you know, it started off with a certain type of tech. You know, I mean, you know, a car, okay? Certainly a sophisticated piece of technology. Well, how did it begin? It began as the wheel that some caveman had carved out of, you know, out of stone, okay? And then, you know, the wheels got better. They got rounder. And then, now we're driving cars all over the place, okay? It's the same thing with regards to history and the what ifs. History is there for us to learn from prior successes and prior mistakes in order to perfect whatever truth is to be gleaned from this and how we can use this to better our society. Okay. What if Rush Limbaugh, however many years ago that was, 2003, almost 20 years ago was when I had that conversation with him on the air. What if he had not shot down that discussion? What if he had pursued this issue of the neocons? Yes, it is safe to assume that his radio career would have been over to some degree. He would have been, you know, they would have found something on him. They would have accused him of being a Jew hater or whatever, okay? But at the same token, you know, what we are forced to, you know, the ugly truth that we are forced to acknowledge here is that, at least in Rush Limbaugh's case, he helped to create, he helped to nurture and protect this monster that now is literally ripping our country apart piece by piece. It's the neocons that are out to destroy Donald Trump. It is the neocons who are hell-bent on keeping these wars in the Middle East going, which Donald Trump has said he is going to end. That is the nucleus of the entire problem, folks. And as this, obviously, as it relates to all of us, okay. Again, we have to ask the question, where would we be today? And I ask this when we are on the cusp, literally, of the biggest political meltdown that this country has ever experienced. Okay. I firmly expect to see tanks and troops in the streets of this country within, I don't know, it could be within 24 hours, folks, okay, because this is the corner into which Donald Trump has been forced to go. And it is because of the neocons. So what if Limbaugh and the rest of the rah, 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 let's go to war against Iraq brigade, what if they had said, wait a minute, all these people here, the Rubens and the Cohens and the Krauthammers and the Crystals and the Kagans and the, maybe these people, maybe they're dangerous just because they say they're conservative. Maybe they're not. Maybe they've got an ulterior motive altogether that has nothing to do with preserving the traditional conservative values of Americans. And of course, expanding that into our own world, folks, how much better off would we be today? Not just us, you know, the members of the 9/11 truth blank, but the country in general, if people such as Alex Jones had not gone down the road to Crazyville and started spouting. I mean, think about it, folks. If Jones had, if he had just stayed smart and sharp and not gone down these crazy roads, that, I mean, he's got a hell of an audience. There's no question about it. He would have been a forum for promoting Trump's policies, not to make America great again, folks, but just to save America. Okay? That's where we would have been. We would have been much further along the road instead of where we are now. And on that note, folks, I think it's time now. Let's see, we are at 34 minutes, so I'm going to try to wrap this up within 25 minutes. So anyway, last program, yesterday, 24 hours ago, we were discussing the upcoming certification, the vote count. And of course, we all know what happened with that is that a bunch of Antifa agents, okay, dressed as Trump supporters, stormed the Capitol and screwed everything up. At the end of this, once they reconvened, Pence went ahead and announced that Biden was the winner. Okay, everybody was hoping that Pence was going to use his constitutionally approved powers to initiate some type of, hey, let's wait, hold on, let's not rush into this. You know, we have people here from the other side who say that there was some monkey business going on in this. And this is all perfectly legal, folks. All of these things that Trump's support in the Congress, all of the things that they were bringing forth, you know, these were not obstructionists. This is the law. These things were written into the law in order to make sure that the elections that take place in this country are done legally and by the book. And you know, this is something that I had to explain to my kids just a little while before coming in here to do the program. You know, election stealing an election is just as illegal as it is to steal a car. Okay, you steal a car, and a man with a badge and a gun is going to throw you to the ground. He's going to put handcuffs on you, and he's going to take you to jail. Election theft is much more serious, okay, because election theft obviously affords individuals into positions of power, okay, where they make decisions and wield influence and political power that affects the well-being of whatever untold number of people happen to be under them, okay? And at least at the national level, we're talking about national security, okay? Because obviously, as we have found out now, when you have members of our lawmaking body and members of the executive branch and of the judicial branch who are there operating as the eyes and the ears and the busy hands of a foreign power who does not have the well-being of our country in mind, this is dangerous to our national security, okay? Having all of these, well, we really can't call the neocons dual loyalists because they only have one loyalty, okay? And it's not to the United States. The United States is just the horse that they're riding on to bring them to whatever destination it is that they want with regards to home sweet home for them, which of course is the Jewish state. Anyway, at the end of this endeavor, which we all know was a false flag attack that happened at the Capitol yesterday. You know, I'm sure that some of those idiots there, especially the ones of the white nationalist variety, they probably weren't Antifa people. If it's one thing that I have learned over the years in dealing with that particular element of people, the white nationalists, they are just amazingly, amazingly stupid, amazingly unperceptive and unintelligent. Okay, all we have to do is look at the spectacles that they make of themselves, you know, at places such as Charlottesville and things like that. And they think that that's a great, that was a great thing, you know. This spectacle with guys marching around in Nazi uniforms and waving the flag of the Third Reich and all the rest of that stuff and making the stiff arm salute. They think that that was a big success, right? So I have no doubt that some of those white nationalist types probably were the real deal, that they weren't Antifa. Although I know that there were plenty of Antifa people there too, just to make, because they are trained and they are well-resourced and funded and everything else, and they are there to make sure that everything goes according to plan, which was what we saw, okay, the storming of the Capitol, which for some reason the cops, boy, they really didn't seem that concerned with bringing an end to it. It's almost as if the fix was in. The fix was in, and that they were given orders to let these guys go on the rampage in order to create the political narrative that Trump's enemies needed. Okay, so the votes were certified for Biden by Pence. And what do we wake up to today, ladies and gentlemen? News outlet after news outlet after news outlet, all saying the same thing. 25th Amendment impeachment. 25th Amendment impeachment. We have to get Trump out of there. We can't let him stay in there another minute. Nancy Pelosi said this is of the utmost urgency and emergency. Well, when you get all of these same horn blowers all blowing their horns at the same time on the same note, saying the same thing, folks, then you know that there is this is what's known as a concerted effort, you know, as in a concert, right, where everybody's playing the same piece, you know, in the same key, at the same tempo and all the rest of that, okay? So what is it about Trump being in office for two more weeks, supposedly according to them, because, right, Biden has been certified as the winner, what is it about the next 2 weeks that has got them so rattled? Well, the president, I think, gave us a pretty good hint in the speech that he gave yesterday prior to this this large group of supporters marching to the Capitol. And he said, we're not going to quit. We're not going to give up. I'm never going to stop fighting for you. And we're not going to let them steal the White House. Now, you know, all of that, of course, some people will just chalk that up to, well, he's just giving a speech and all the rest of that stuff. But it's actually much deeper and much more serious than that, folks. Much more serious than that. As I've said on this program for the last 5 years, Donald Trump is deadly serious about the business of saving America, okay? He understands just how serious things are, that all, you know, as I said on, I think on the last program, and I apologize for that, folks, but I don't remember things as quickly as I did in years past. I'm not a young man anymore, and obviously, you know, with what's going on right now, it does take a toll on your ability to recall things quickly. Anyway, what was I talking about? You think I'm making a joke here, folks? But I'm not. I actually did forget my train of thought. Let's see, Donald Trump, deadly serious. Yes, yes, he understands. He understands that we really are standing at the precipice of our own demise, and that all it's going to take is just a little gust of wind in order to push us over. And it is for that reason that the entire Trump phenomenon has been brought into existence, folks. It is a do-or-die moment for the United States. He understands fully what the stakes are and who is behind it. Now, he doesn't talk about that, folks. He doesn't talk about the Jews. He doesn't talk about Benjamin Netanyahu. He doesn't talk about the neoconservatives. He'll talk about the Never Trumpers, and he'll list them. He'll name them, especially Crystal. And he does say all they want to do is start wars and kill people. Okay. But he also knows that that is the, you know, that's like grabbing two bare electric wires, live wires, okay? You're not going to grab those wires and you're not going to get jolted, okay? And you look at all of the grief that they have given him in the Jewish mainstream media, and let's not engage in any silly, pointless debates about whether or not the Jewish mainstream media in America is indeed the Jewish mainstream media in America. He knows he can't have that discussion. It's just not possible. His biggest base of support in the United States are these insane Christian Zionist evangelicals who love the Jews and love Israel more than they love Jesus Christ and their own country. Okay. It's just, you that rat poison lollipop that they have been sucking on for thousands of years, known as the Old Testament, okay, you would have no more an easy task having them take that lollipop, that rat poison lollipop, out of their mouth as you would to take a steak out of the mouth of a Doberman, okay? So, as I said, Trump understands the severity of what we are facing. And it's not the Chinese. Yeah, the Chinese are a problem, folks. But, you know, America's not going to become a communist nation a year after Joe Biden becomes president. Okay? It's not going to become a communist nation. We're too well armed and the people are just too... You know, this is the double-edged sword that the Jews have created. They have created, through their control of media, they have controlled, they have created a nation of people who are as addicted to violence as they are to alcohol and as they are to pornography. They love their violence and they love their guns. And don't get me wrong, folks, okay? I am a very, very strong supporter of the Second Amendment. I carry a gun with me everywhere I go. I'm very proficient in its use, okay? But having said that, nevertheless, you know, the American people do have a love affair with their guns. And it is for that reason that the Chinese or anybody else seeking to create a communist takeover of America, on that basis alone, they would not succeed. Okay. So, Trump trying to save the America, trying to save America from the communists, okay. This is what he has to say in order to rally the support of the American people behind him. He can't say the Jews are dragging us into these wars in the Middle East that by their very nature are designed to destroy us. And he can't say that. He can't say that. Now, where we are with all of this now, as I said, they have backed Trump into this corner and they have left him with very few options, okay? As far as doing this thing politically, of writing the stolen election, writing, meaning setting it right, that was settled last night, okay? Settled last night. And in the process, you saw even some of Trump's supporters in the Senate, like what's-her-name, Loeffler, who totally turned on him. Totally turned on him, left him twisting in the wind. So settling this thing in a political way is not possible anymore. Okay. The only thing that is left at his disposal is the military. Okay, which I think... Personally, my personal theory is that this is what he has understood from the beginning he was going to be forced to do. Okay, I think that he went into this thing understanding just how rotten and corrupt Congress is, and that he would go ahead and he would play the political game. for as long as he could, but that eventually it would reach the point where it was no longer possible, and then he was going to have to pull out the guns. You know, and I use this to illustrate to a few people. There's this movie called Gran Torino with Clint Eastwood, and he plays this this old vet. I can't remember if he was a Marine or whatever, but I think he'd fought in maybe Japan or something like that. And he is the proverbial angry old white man, and he's angry because he's watching his country fall apart. You know, all the things that he fought for, and you know, he lost his friends in fighting and all the rest of that, and he's watching as America goes to the dogs. And there's this one scene where he's watching these three black hoodlums, and don't get me wrong, folks, I'm not saying that black men are all hoodlums. I'm just saying, for the purposes of this discussion, as it appears in the movie, there are these three black hoodlums, okay, on the street corner, and they're manhandling this little Asian girl. I think she's Korean or something. And Clint Eastwood is watching all of this from his truck, watching all of this take place, and he knows what they are going to do to her. And so he pulls up in his truck, and you know, and he's just sitting in his truck staring at them, right next to them, and you know, they start mouthing off. And so he gets out of his truck, and he says, you know, let the girl go. And they won't. So he reaches into his coat, and he pulls out what you think is going to be his gun, and he pulls out his finger. He's holding his finger out like a gun, and he's pointing it at them, okay, waving it, you know, as if it were a gun. And they're like, you know, what's the matter with him? He's crazy, whatever. And he tells the little girl, he says, get in the truck. Well, they won't let her go. So then he reaches into his coat, and he pulls out the gun. Okay, now they know he's serious. Okay, before, he was going to do it the political way by pointing his finger at them. Okay, but then when that didn't work, when it didn't bring the point home to them in the manner necessary, he had to pull out the gun, the real thing. And this is exactly the situation that the president is facing today. It's no longer possible to fix the problems that we have in this country and to avoid the disasters that are not just coming, but they're here. It is no longer possible to do this politically, okay? As I was explaining to one of my daughters today, you know, I explained to her, I said, now you've got this job, and I said the deal is that you go to work at a certain time and you perform certain duties, and at the end of this you get paid. Okay, so you've got this business arrangement. I said, now imagine if you went to work and let's say you put in 40 hours for the week and you're supposed to get paid for 40 hours worth of work. And let's say on when you get your paycheck, you're only paid for 10 of them. Okay, so you're you go to your boss and you say, well, you know, I'm missing 30 hours worth of pay here. And he says, I just didn't feel like giving it to you. Even though the agreement is that, you know, you're supposed to be paid for them. Okay, how can you do business with somebody like this? Okay, you're dealing with a criminal, somebody who does not know how to do business fairly and all the rest of it. Well, this is basically what the president is now facing. He and I think he has known this all along. He knew that this day was coming when he would not, it was no longer possible to deal with these problems in a political way. That it was going to take him reaching in and pulling the gun out from behind his coat. And I think that that is basically what we're facing now, ladies and gentlemen, is that we know that this is certainly what they are afraid of. Because the, as I said earlier, all of the talk on the media, synonymous, simultaneous, in concert, is 25th Amendment. Okay, 25th Amendment, which can be done in an hour. In an hour. Not an impeachment that takes months of preparation and prosecution and all of the rest of that. They need him out of there now because they know what he is about to do. And I think that what it boils down to is the Insurrection Act. The Insurrection Act was written in the early 1800s, and it really is, it's a very broad thing. I mean, the president can basically declare an insurrection in order to, you know, see that the laws, not of just of the United States, but of the states themselves, that they are enforced. You know, I mean, it does. It's not very specific, at least unless there's follow up legislation to it that I just didn't research. But it's very, very vague, very broad. You know, if he declares that the laws are not being followed, then he has control over the military and of the militia, which of course are the armed citizens. Okay, and this is where we're headed. And I think, again, well, you know, I'm in out of respect and reverence to my dear friend Mike Piper, who always, you know, counseled me not to make predictions. You know, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to make a prediction, and if I'm wrong about it, then fine, I'll eat crow or whatever it is. But I'm just going to go ahead and make it. I think that Trump intends to see half of Congress arrested. Half of Congress. He intimated this 6 months ago in a tweet where he said that Pelosi and Nadler and Schiff and all of the other creatures there who prosecuted this fake impeachment against him, that they were guilty of treason. Treason. Now, that is very specific legal terminology, folks. In fact, as you know, I think I mentioned on yesterday's program, it's the only crime that is specifically mentioned in the Constitution, treason. Adhering to our enemies, giving them aid and comfort. So there is no question about the fact that these people, remember, all these people in Congress have sat by in the aftermath of events such as 9/11, of Israel's attack on the USS Liberty, of Israel's assassination of John F. Kennedy. They have sat by and they have given aid and comfort to this enemy that has engaged in overt acts of war against the United States. And by that definition, that means that they can be held, they can be arrested for treason. And I think that this is part of what is fueling the panic on their part, why they're all screaming, 25th Amendment, 25th Amendment, 25th Amendment. They've got to get this thing moving fast, fast, in order to get him out of there, or at least to take away his ability. You know, he would still be president, but he would no longer have the legal power to declare that an insurrection exists, and therefore to initiate the provisions of the Insurrection Act. My personal feeling, folks, is that that declaration was signed a long time ago by Trump. A long time ago, and it's just been sitting there in his top desk drawer, just waiting for him to take it out and to push the button on this thing and to get it rolling. That's where we are headed. That's where we are. Now, I know a lot of people will say to themselves, good, good. You know, let it, you know, bring it on, as that little monkey George Bush said. Bring it on. Well, I understand, and I sympathize with that a lot myself, folks. But in all fairness, you know, I have to make sure that we all understand exactly what we're talking about here, okay? Anybody who thinks that military action on the part of Trump is going to be something that is only going to be short-lived and is going to have small repercussions. I mean, who among us would not be cheering and, you know, living large, celebrating at the news that half of Congress had been hauled out in handcuffs and leg irons and that they've been charged with treason? Yes, that's correct. We would love that. But this isn't 1820. okay, when something like that could happen. And the reverberations from something happening like that were basically localized and isolated only to here. Okay, the United States, by virtue of interconnectedness of economies and you know, lightning fast communication and all of the rest of that stuff, if a third of the Congress were arrested, half the Congress, whatever, okay, this would signal extreme political instability in the United States. And these countries around the world, most notably China, okay, who have invested a lot of money, a lot of their cash into our government bonds and T-bills and things like that, okay, who basically keep our dollar, the value of our dollar where it is because they keep their money invested in the United States. If the United States suddenly finds itself 33 or 50% light in terms of its lawmaking body, okay, then you will see a massive exodus of investment capital from the United States economy, which would cause the dollar to absolutely crash. And I think this is one of the reasons why the president in the last 4 years has made sure to make us energy independent and to bring back much of our manufacturing capabilities, because I think he knows that we are in for an extended period of disruption to where we're going to have to take care of ourselves. We can't depend on other countries to provide us with oil. We can't depend on other countries to provide us with steel and with finished goods and all of the rest of that. Now, this doesn't even bring into the equation, folks, some of the other nasty things that would deliberately be done by countries such as Israel. Of course, they would use the Chinese as their Shabbos Goyim, okay, just as they did the Arabs on 9/11. As we have talked about on this program many times, we're already over an hour here, folks. Okay, I'm going to wrap it up soon. I do have one more theory I want to throw out there. It's not even a theory, it's a what if. It's a what if. There's just no telling what other things we have in this country. Are there nukes that have been smuggled in by the Israelis? I think yes. I think they have smuggled them into every capital in the world in order to keep every government, every country totally in line with what they demand of them. Have the Chinese brought anything in? Okay, we know that the Chinese and the Israelis are working very closely on all of this, folks. China is the next New Jerusalem for them. What America has been for the last 100 or so years is what they plan to make China next. Okay. And so as much as we obviously would welcome the news that Pelosi and Nadler and Schumer and all of the rest of them welcome the news of their arrest, at the same time, we have to understand that this does not come with a heavy price that we will pay personally, okay, when the banking system collapses, when people don't have food in the middle of winter now, when they don't have heat in the middle of winter, okay, when there are tanks and troops on the streets of every American city, okay? These are the possibilities, maybe even the probabilities, maybe even the definites that we are looking at in the very near future, because January 20th is creeping up on us very quickly. Okay, one more quick thing I'm going to throw out there. It's not a theory, it's a what if. Obviously, Mike Pence and his actions last night in quote-unquote certifying what was a stolen election is highly problematic. And, you know, I have thought about this a lot. I never trusted, well, I didn't trust Pence in the beginning because I knew that he was one of these Israel firster types. But, you know, as Trump began, you know, his administration, I warmed to Pence, warmed to him, even though he, you know, he was a supporter of Israel and all the rest of that stuff. And, you know, I became more, you know, my suspicion and antipathy towards him lessened quite a bit. Well, obviously, with what happened last night, this begs a certain amount of discussion, okay, questioning why he would do this, because you know he has just committed suicide politically by doing this, okay? Trump's base will never elect him to any office again for the rest of his life. He finished himself off last night. So why would he do something like that if it is on the up and up? So I have two theories here. The first theory I'm going to give is the one that I think is the one that seems the most reasonable. And it is as follows. Okay. As I said just a few moments ago, Trump knew a long time ago that it was going to come to this, that he was going to have to pull the gun out of his coat. And he knows the trouble that is headed our way as a country as a result of this. We could see a complete collapse of the economy. It could spark a war. You know, I mean, there are going to be nations who are going to take advantage of the instability that would ensue from something such as declaration of the Insurrection Act and the deployment of troops all over the country. Trump knew that it was going to come to this, and he knows the trouble that it's going to cause. Okay. And the only way, in his mind, that he sees us getting through this is that he has to have as much of the backing and the support of the American people as possible. Now, Trump's supporters support him, okay? But there's nothing like the support you'll get from them for something like this, putting tanks and troops on the street. There's nothing like the support you would get from them if the election were stolen from them and were made official, okay? Meaning it is entirely possible that Trump and Pence worked this out ahead of time. Trump said, go ahead and do it, because he needs that rage on the part of his base of support. He needs that rage, because that rage and that support is what is going to sustain him and sustain whatever hopes we have, whatever hopes he has of pulling this country through what this approaching storm that necessitates him deploying troops. So it is entirely possible, and I'll just say that, what if Trump and Pence work this out ahead of time, that Pence is going to certify the vote, knowing the rage that it's going to cause within Trump's base of support, thus providing for him the fuel that he needs in order to make this thing work and in order to get us over the other side. Okay, that is my first what if. The second one, I'm going to go through it quickly because we're already here at an hour and seven, almost 8 minutes, longer than I wanted to be, and I've got a pot of spaghetti sauce cooking that I need to tend to before it burns. So anyway, the other one is this, folks, because, again, we have to ask the question, why would Pence commit suicide, political suicide like this? He will never be able to win the office of county dog catcher, okay? He'll never be rewarded by the left, by the Democrats, for what he did, okay? So what if this? What if, and again, too, folks, I'm sorry to have to keep digressing here. Pence doesn't have any pressure points to squeeze. that I know of. I've never run into any whispers of scandal involving him cheating on his wife or him, you know, dallying some underage person. Not that I've found. There haven't been any pressure points that they can squeeze. So what may they have done in order to get him to do this? Okay. 3 weeks ago, almost to the day, okay, to much fanfare and media hype, Vice President Pence appeared along with his wife, and they were the first people in the administration to get the COVID vaccine. The president declined it. He said he's not going to get it until he has been advised by the medical staff at the White House to do it. And to this day, if I'm correct, he has not yet gotten that vaccine. Now, I think personally it's because Trump doesn't trust the people around him to give him a vaccine. I think he knows he's surrounded by traitors and spies, and that they may give him something completely different. Well, folks, maybe they gave Pence something different. I will put the link up on, you know, after I post the program. But I ran a piece about a week or so ago that it's a section of the book written by Viktor Ostrovsky, the former Mossad agent, where he talks about how Israel has this germ warfare lab out in the Negev desert, and it's called, here we go again. It's one of those ugly Hebrew words, Nes Ziona or something like that. And in it, Ostrovsky, in his book, remember folks, this book is 25 years old, something like that. In this book, he talks about how the Israelis would kidnap these Palestinians, and they would take them to this research facility out in the Negev desert, where they were testing what he described as doomsday viruses. Doomsday viruses that would be used to kill a lot of people in an asymmetrical way if Israel found herself in a war. And he said as well that that they would test new antidotes and vaccines, so that they would be able that they would have what they needed to save their own population if they had to deploy germ warfare in order to kill some other group of people. So what if, folks? What if the jab that Mike Pence got 3 weeks ago, and which his wife got 3 weeks ago, was not the COVID-19 virus at all, or I'm sorry, vaccine at all, but rather something that was cooked up in an Israeli lab. And then after he got the jab, he got the phone call, or he got the visit, and they said, by the way, Mr. Vice President, the jab you got was not the vaccine for COVID-19. What you got injected with was a live virus that's going to kill you in a very short amount of time if you don't do exactly as we tell you. And here's what you're going to do. You're going to certify the vote for Biden, and you're going to initiate implementation of the 25th Amendment. And then after you do those things, we're going to give you and your wife the vaccine that will save your lives. And anybody else who you may have come in contact with that you could have infected, we'll make sure that they are vaccinated as well. Now, yes, folks, that I guess it sounds like something out of a Tom Clancy novel or something like that. But again, we have to remember that, you know, the political stakes that are involved in this, just how high and just how serious they are. It's number one. And number two, we're dealing with Israel. Okay. You're dealing with the most fanatical, amoral, vicious, vindictive, violent humanoids that have ever walked on God's green earth. Would they be willing to do something like that? Would they be willing to inject the vice president with a deadly virus, thinking that he's getting the COVID-19 vaccine. And then to let them know, you're going to die. You're going to die unless, and your wife as well, and your kids and your grandkids, you know, because they were infected. They're going to die unless you do exactly as we say, at which point we'll give you the vaccine and everything will be okay. Yes, that's a big what if, folks. That's a big what if. But I think it bears a certain degree of, maybe. Anyway, that's it for today, folks. Let's see, we're at an hour and 14 minutes. I apologize for the length. I hope that it was worth it. You'll never get that hour and 14 minutes back. Hope it was worth it. God willing, we'll be back here this weekend. But again, folks, it's entirely possible that we won't be, because we can only do this for as long as there is a functioning system for us to use in as a broadcast medium, and that all could go down very quickly. We just found out right before going to tape today that all of Trump's social media platforms have shut him down. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of the things that he used in order to communicate directly with the American people so that he didn't have to utilize the compromised medium of you know, the mainstream media, they have shut him down. And that's a bad sign, folks. That's a very bad sign. And I think that this is a harbinger of what we could possibly all be dealing with very soon, because how else do you create the kind of mass chaos? Remember, folks, I think we talked about it on the last program. You know, the Tower of Babel, how are they able to end this building project? You know, and when you're talking about Trump and his building project of making America great again, which really, folks, if we want to just translate it, it's let's save America from certain doom, death, and demise. How did they stop the building project with the Tower of Babel? They confused their speech so that no one could communicate with each other. And I think that this is a very good example of what they have done and what they are planning to do. So we'll see, folks. We'll see when Sunday rolls around if we're all here, if we're all still breathing, and God's green earth is still spinning on its axis, then we'll give it another shot. Until we meet again, folks, everybody take care. Stay safe. Stay sharp. Pray for everything, folks. Everything that is good. Everything that is good. And, you know, I realize discussions of this type, you know, they don't exactly inspire a lot of hope or enthusiasm. But then again, folks, you know, the woman is in labor and is nearing her time, and a baby is about to be born. Yeah, it's going to be messy. It's going to be loud. There's going to be a lot of screaming and hollering and clawing and blood and all the rest of that. But at the end of this, something new, something beautiful will be born. So that's it for tonight, folks. Until we meet again, well, as Limbaugh has begun using on his program as of late quite often, keep the faith.